I just want to acknowledge the other authors on this because it was definitely everyone's effort, and I have no relationships to disclose. So the first thing I want to do is explain a little bit about Florida Red Tide, because it is a little bit different here. I would guess not everybody in the room knows what it is. And then talk a little bit about our study, which we started as a qualitative and resulted in quantitative, and then some of the implications. So a little bit about Florida Red Tide and why it's a health concern. It's a microscopic organism, a dinoflagellate. It's not just in the Gulf of Mexico, but does affect the Gulf of Mexico annually. Very patchy blooms. It has no taste and no smell. It is harmful in very minute doses. It not only causes massive fish kills, but also shellfish contamination. And then Florida red tide, as opposed to many of the other red tides, also has, it aerosolizes the toxin. So as far as health concerns go, from the shellfish point of view, you have neurotoxic shellfish poisoning from ingestion. But as far as the aerosolized portion, there are quite a few other health concerns there. Florida, most of the places that it affects are places that have wonderful, beautiful beaches. So that's kind of an issue. You can see we have, I could probably add 20 more things to this list. So let me talk a little bit about the shellfish poisoning. Neurotoxic shellfish poisoning contaminates bivalves. The symptoms are tingling or numbness of the extremities, reversal of hot and cold, gastrointestinal. The onset is very fast, but the duration is only a few days. So it appears to be very underreported. However, the Florida Department of Aquaculture will use cell counts to close down the shellfish beds. So we don't have a lot of cases of neurotoxic shellfish poisoning, mainly from recreational people that couldn't read the signs that said the shellfish bed was closed. As far as respiratory studies and the inhalation, over the past 11 years, we've done quite a few studies, both on the healthy population, which shows that there's an increase in just upper airway symptoms, but for people with a diagnosis of asthma in particular, we do find an increase in wheezing and chest tightness, as well as a decrease in lung function from just 1 hour of exposure to Florida Red Tide, 1 hour of walking on the beach, and that decrease in airflow can last up to 5 days from 1 hour. So here's one of the other issues. It's hard to see the little blue points on there, but this is Siesta Key Beach and Siesta Key Island, or Siesta Key, which is about 2.5 to 3 miles wide. And the problem with red tide here is that not only is it in the Gulf of Mexico, but it'll go in that inland. So the toxin actually is in the air for up to a mile inland. So you're not just getting it from both sides of Siesta Key, you're also getting it on the mainland. So we did this study. We started out with 20 semi-structured interviews, and our three areas of questioning were what people's knowledge was of red tide, what factors affect their beach-going activities during a red tide bloom, and what factors affect their seafood consumption during a Florida red tide bloom. And then we stratified this to include not just asthmatics and healthy people, but also residents and what we call snowbirds, which are people that migrate to Florida between 3 and 6 months out of the year. They're living in Florida. Usually they own condos there. So we wanted to see what they thought. What the qualitative results showed was that the red tide knowledge, according to these 20 people, certainly they understood it caused fish kills and noxious odor, keeping in mind Florida red tide itself doesn't have an odor, and it's associated with respiratory irritation. Good to know. We know this already. But they believed it was man-made. As far as going to the beach during a Florida red tide, what people were most concerned with were dead fish, degree of smell, if there was some sort of influence by experts, a warning that it's safe to or not to, safe to go to the beach. And then wind direction, which because it's aerosolized does have an effect. And then, believe it or not, density of the crowd or availability of parking. Again, people want to go to our beaches in Florida unless they can't find a parking spot. As far as consumption of shellfish during a Florida red tide, we found it interesting that a lot of people said they want either the government to say it's safe or to say it's not safe. And there were trust issues with the grocery store or the restaurant and whether seafood came from the Gulf of Mexico or not, keeping in mind that the oil spill happened just before this study. Price was an issue, as well as whether they were eating the seafood at a local chain, or local or national chain, whether that be a restaurant or a grocery store. So when we moved on and put together the survey, we looked, the important parts of the demographics here is if you look at the snowbird population, you'll see an age that most of them are over 50, which if you think about owning a house, owning two homes, one up where it's snowing and then one where it's really nice all the time, most people can't afford that till they're after 50. If you look at education, again, with the snowbirds, you'll find that they're a slightly higher educated crowd. By some higher education, we mean some college, and then master's and doctorate above that. So I'm not really going to go over what the answer to the knowledge questions were, but these are what we asked. The important part that we found was when we did regressions for age, gender, and education between residents and snowbirds, between asthmatics and healthy, and between all four different groups, that it showed no difference. Everybody knew the same stuff. Then we actually looked at the perceived risk of things like how much they were concerned about red tide, things like that. And the two areas to look at were when you're looking at the residents and snowbird part, concern about red tide, the snowbirds were more concerned significantly. And then when you look at healthy versus asthmatic, you can see the asthmatics, for the most part, are more concerned about quite a few of the red tide issues or perceived risks there. Now, one matter of interest you'll see in this next one, if you look at the last two questions, any method to prevent red tide, and then the final question is methods to prevent it with unknown impacts. And that's important when you look at this, when we did the regressions on this, the interesting part is this last one, where individuals with some college but not necessarily advanced degrees were more likely to agree that using control methods with unknown results was okay. Additionally, older individuals, we did found that eating red tide was more risky, as well as they were more concerned about red tide. So the other two pieces, the shellfish consumption and the beach going activities, we use something called conjoint analysis. My guess is not a whole lot of people are familiar with it, so I put this up here. I actually went through Sawtooth Software is what we used, and they have a nice example on their website. So I actually went through it, so now you'll understand a little better. So they give you a whole bunch of options, and they change the options. So in the first option, it said, which would I prefer to sign up for? A visa with no annual fee that's 14% interest and $5,000 credit limit. And yeah, I like that option. So I would prefer that. Then the second option, and I think they had 20 or 25 of these, the second option was a Discover card with a $40 annual fee and 10% interest and with a $5,000 credit. So after I'm done with this part of the conjoint, these questions, it gives you the utilities first. What those are is whether it's a Visa or a Discover or a MasterCard, and it shows the preference that I chose for those. So in this case, when I answered all of these, it appears that I prefer Visa. However, those are the individual categories there. Then it gives you the importance score. So if you look at, it does seem that I prefer Visa. However, when you combine all of the utilities, the importance of brand to me is only 3%. I prefer no annual fee at 67%, apparently. But what's interesting is while you're going through these, you don't really get that that's what you prefer until it spits out the results. I mean, I kind of knew that. So when we put this in the context of buying seafood during a Florida red tide and going to the beach during a Florida red tide, I've shown you the examples that we were asking them. And for the seafood, there were 24 different choices they had to go through. You can see the options there. Obviously, I couldn't show you everything. So, for instance, whether it's seafood is not from the Gulf in that top one. The other option would be seafood is from the Gulf of Mexico. And some of these have three options, some have two, so I put those there. And they go through these, and it is time-consuming. One of the things we found out is people tend to, in their mind, only pick one or two things that really stick out. So some people could care less about the other things. What we found when you're looking at just the utilities part, if you look at the things that are circled in red, so utilities are a measurement of the desirability of that particular level that we're looking at. The strength in, say, dead fish, it is much stronger, that 80 number there is stronger. They want no dead fish versus many. Whereas few dead fish didn't rate real high as far as those utilities are concerned. And because this is about going to the beach and the aerosolized red tide, we compared the asthmatics to the healthy people. What we found was that wind direction made a difference, as well as dead fish making a difference between the asthmatics and the healthy population. However, if you look at the very bottom there that I have circled in purple, the general propensity to go to the beach during a Florida red tide on a scale from 1 to 9 is only 3.18. So not a lot of people want to go to the beach. All right. As far as regressions go, I'm not going to cover most of this, but I wanted to show you that we did do it. The main part that was interesting to us when we did the regressions is the asthmatics really did stick out as far as wind direction and dead fish. Age actually stuck out with beach warning significance, as did gender. When we're talking about consumption of shellfish, if you look at that first number circled in the green, that negative 124, people really wanted to see a warning sign that said, do not eat shellfish during a Florida red tide. They really want to see that somewhere. Or, as you see that in the red, that 73.69, they want somebody to say, eat it. Okay? Trust in merchant was also quite high when we're talking about utilities, but there was no difference between what Snowbird said and what residents said. And again, the general propensity to eat seafood between 1 and 9 was 4.27 during a Florida red tide. So it's still very low that people are going to eat shellfish and seafood during a Florida red tide. I don't know why there are blanks in there. I do know why there are blanks in there. This is supposed to be showing me something that's not coming out. The importance scores. Let me go back and see if it's going to give me, I don't know why these aren't coming out. Basically, when you take all those utilities and put the importance scores in there, what it shows you is that about 60% of going to the beach had to do with dead fish and smell. 60% is what people are really concerned about. And because red tide doesn't smell, it's actually the dead fish and everything else. As far as shellfish consumption goes, the warning from the government is very, very strong. When we looked at regressions, trust in the merchant really popped out as differences, and then the propensity to eat shellfish gender-wise popped out. So, implications. As far as knowledge goes, the most important thing that we found is that the regression showed us is that what we're doing, everybody's getting the same message. So that's great. We have booths set up. We have signage on the beach. We have websites. We have pamphlets. That seems to be getting out to both the snowbirds, the residents, the asthmatics, all the healthy people across the board. What we found out about beach activity, however, is that what people are mainly concerned with is the smell and the dead fish. So if you see in the top one, this was quite a few years ago, but we have literally dead fish covering the beach. So if we were to clear that off more readily, more people would probably go to the beach because that's their main concern. We also have set up a beach conditions reporting system site where the sentinels on the beach, in most cases it's lifeguards, sometimes it's park rangers that are there every day, will report twice a day when there are dead fish and when there's respiratory irritation on the beach. And we have signage so that everybody with a smartphone can check that while they're headed to the beach. And finally, as far as seafood implications go, just a show of hands, anybody notice on their hotel menus, the room service menus, that there is a consumer advisory? Anybody notice that? I'm the only one because I'm the only one looking for it. The red circles here are consumer advisories. They are not for red tide because they actually say for undercooked, raw or undercooked shellfish. They're for bacteria. However, how many of you knew that? A few. Do you work on Vibrio? If you look at the map here, this is actually our area right now. The shellfish beds are closed due to red tide. So there is, we're not taking shellfish right now from those beds. But people are still not eating it. And they still want to see that it's either safe or not safe to eat it. I think what we need to say is that it is safe to eat this. Because as it is, people don't see the warning signs we have on every single menu. That's all I have for you. With the exception of, I want to thank our funding agency for this project, as well as my co-authors. Thank you.